This is CII.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of the French Connection. Today's date is the 21st day of November 2008. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and it is wonderful to be here with you again for this most important of broadcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to be presenting you this information. CII has been generous enough this evening to allow me to do both programs, one with a Mr. Ralph Nader that I did a couple of hours ago, as well as this upcoming interview with Gerald Celente, who is from Trends Research Institute, a remarkable career this man has had in predicting things. He's put his reputation on the line so many times to make predictions about how things will pan out in the future, and then found himself right on top of the target. Now, of course, nobody is perfect, and I believe Mr. Celente will be the first to say that he's not been perfect with his predictions, but he's been remarkably accurate, more so than just about anybody who's ever done the job of trend research. And in that same light, the work that he is doing now on the financial side of things, and he's starting to discuss it openly, he believes, as he will tell you himself, that we are in for some terrible choices, and what he sees as a future scenario in the United States pretty much seems like a bad choice in any direction we take. And so he's been willing of late to speak on these issues because, first off, he's a man of courage, and you'll notice that right away when he starts speaking on the program. But secondly, he's a man who says, you know, look, how much wealth do I really need to be happy? How many things do I need to have in my, how many cars in my garage do I need to have? Frankly, what I would rather have is an honest and caring nation that is run and works correctly. And so, coming from that bent, what you find is Mr. Celente is willing to go head on into a lot of the issues that a lot of people won't discuss. And that's courageous. So I don't know if my engineer has Mr. Celente already on the line. I'm going to ask if he does.
Hello, how you doing?
Oh, Gerald Celente, wonderful. Daryl Bradford Smith with you, my friend. I'm so happy to have you on. I want to apologize for not being able to get Mr. Ralph Nader on at the same time as you.
Oh, that's quite all right.
I didn't have him on. Yeah. One of the things I want to get right into, Gerald, is a little bit about your background so that the people listening on this broadcast have an idea of the remarkable history you've got with predictions. And, I mean, you've done the legwork. I know these things don't come by osmosis. They come from hard work. So what kind of things have you done, and what has your career been like?
Well, my career began, actually, out of graduate school. I ran the mayoral campaign of Yonkers, New York. I was one of the top people. And that's a city of 300,000 people. It's not small. And from there, they sent me up to the New York State Senate, and I was an assistant to the Secretary of the Senate. This is the guy that runs the whole show. And that was the worst job I ever had, because what would happen is I was a young man at the time in my early 20s, and I'd be, chatting it up with my pal in the back of the Senate chamber, and all of a sudden a senator would walk in, and my buddy would leave me to go help the senator walk down, sit down, pull out his chair, and help the senator sit down. And when my pal came back, I'd say, what's the matter? He can't sit down by himself. He needs help. The point that I'm saying, Daryl, it was a disgusting spectacle to see grown men grovel, particularly from a boy that grew up in the Bronx. And so I started getting a taste of what politics really looks like. And the way you get to the top of the political chain is by sucking your way up to the top. From there, I went to St. John's University, and I taught ostensibly the nation's first course in American politics and campaign technology. From there, I was a government affairs specialist working between Chicago and Washington, D.C., and mostly for the chemical industry at the time. A big chunk of it had to do with chemicals.
Which company specifically? Dow Chemical?
Dow, Union Carbide, DuPont. You name the company, Roman Haas, all of the big companies. So from there, I You know, I learned a lot. Actually, I was in Washington even during the first energy crisis.
And, that was 1973-74, yeah?
That's right. And so Jimmy Carter, at the later years, was president, and I had been following for many years what was going on in Iran. I knew about how the CIA overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in Iran in 1953, spearheaded by Kermit Roosevelt, the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt, and how the Shah had set up the SAVAK, the secret police, this brutal, brutal police force that was only second to the SS. So when the revolution began to happen in Iran, I knew it was real. But meanwhile, back in the States, a different story was being told. Jimmy Carter went to spend New Year's Eve with the Shah and his wife, he and Rosalind. And when he came back to the States, and in those days it was a big deal when the president came back from an overseas trip, particularly this one, which was so in the news, he announced to the American people that the Shah was the island of stability in the Middle East. At that moment, I became a political atheist. I've been around long enough. I don't believe in any political religion.
Yeah.
And after getting over that, it was really a wake-up moment for me. I said, what will be the implications? And I realized that oil and gold prices would go up.
Yeah.
And I started speculating in those markets. And I made enough money to leave my job. And that was in 1980, I set up the Trends Research Institute. Based upon the knowledge that current events form future trends. But what we do different than anyone else is we have a system, the Global Nomic Methodology. We look at over 300 different trend categories on a daily basis, always making connections between fields. All things are connected, like the blood which unites us all, said Chief Seattle.
Yeah.
And so that's our system. And what makes us also separates us from the pack is we're not selling an agenda. We're selling the truth of the information that's being provided and analyzing it for what it is and giving a diagnosis. And as being political atheists, we don't look at things for the way we want, the way we like. We don't have an ideology. There's no hopes or wishes. This is it. This is how it stands. This is where we see it going. Take action if you please. If you don't, that's your business.
Well, you know, I started out my my work career in New York City, and I lived on 63rd and Broadway, and I've done some shopping up off of Jerome Avenue, and fact is I've worked in the Rainbow Room and Cote Basque and Doubles Club and 21. I was a chef for a long time, Gerald.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Well, it was hard work, and I didn't like it, and I went back to school because I didn't want to do that the rest of my life. So I used all the money I could scrape together and went back and got a business degree at New York University. And I got out of that program of business at NYU thinking I knew the way the world worked. Well, surprise, surprise, the world doesn't work like they teach you in the books. And you have had not the same kind of awakening, but I mean, I think we're not that far off in age. And truth of the matter is that I've come to recognize certain things in the world that most people don't learn in their history books. But what we've got today is an implosion of the country that I lost my father in the defense of the United States. He crashed in a fighter jet. And I felt, you know, very tied to the nation as a patriot. And when I started realizing that the people that run the country are not necessarily looking out for my best interest, I began to dig under the surface and found out that we've got an awful lot of rot there. What I'm thinking right now is your trends will maybe dovetail in with that sentiment, because what's happening in the country right now looks to me like we have some very bad choices on the horizon. And part of your introduction, I said I heard another interview you did where you said we've got a few choices for as America goes down this road, and none of them look good. You want to elaborate a little bit on some of the things you see coming with the economy and the rest of it?
On the economy, we're forecasting, and I want to make this clear, we're not Monday morning quarterbacks. We're not these people out there that are saying what's going to happen next and how long it's going to go on for. that never saw it coming in the first place and are now magically putting a time limit on how it's going to end and where the new beginning will happen. If you go back to our Trends Journal, which is our publication at the Trends Research Institute, and you go back to our top trends for 2008,
yep,
they were, that came out on December 17th, 2007. The top trend was the panic of 08 and an economic 9/11. Those were the two top trends out of the top 10 trends that we released. We saw We predicted it, and in this country, they were still debating whether or not we were in a recession, and they still are today.
Well, you know, remember last year in August, there on the back pages of the financial journals were the rumblings of this crisis. Now, this happened now, we're looking back now, 16, 17 months. But even before that, in June, when Goldman Sachs started divesting itself of all of its paper that had anything to do with subprime, but also started getting rid of their credit derivative swaps, and this was printed in like page 8 of the Wall Street Journal, and it was also on some of the more well-read Financial Times was writing about it, but way in the back of the paper. I saw a tsunami coming. I saw it because anybody with a brain could see something bad was on the horizon. I called
this
thing.
We predicted this in our summer 2007 Trends Journal.
That's right.
We said there would be a major financial collapse happening between July and November. It happened in August. So you're right. You can see, and that's what we do. We read the signs. So what we're saying is, in answering your question about what's coming next, we are now forecasting the greatest depression. And the greatest depression is going to be worse than the last depression for a variety of reasons. Number one, back in the last depression, most people in the U.S. did not own homes.
Yep.
There was no such thing as a home equity loan. They weren't carrying all this burden of taxes and mortgages and insurance. Back then, there was no such thing as a credit card. People didn't have them.
That's right.
And back then, people weren't watching their whole livelihoods being wiped out as their 401ks and IRAs go down to virtually zero or a fraction of what they were worth. And back then, the U.S. had a trade surplus, and we had a balanced budget, and we did not have a budget deficit $11.5 trillion U.S. dollars or $700 billion U.S. dollar trade deficit. And back then, we were not fighting two losing wars that have cost already over $2 trillion. And back then, we had a manufacturing base to build us out of the depression when World War II began. Now two-thirds of our GDP are consumer-based. So we're going into this in a lot worse shape. The only suggestions, the only remedies, the only thing being given to the people in the U.S. to get us out of this crisis is to print more money or adjust interest rates. Period. Paragraph.
That's interesting, Gerald, and I'll tell you why you're exactly right that there's very little that can be done, and especially since human beings around the globe no longer grow their own food by and large. If you're living in a Western country, most people in the days that America was strong had local access to fresh produce or local. I remember as a kid and growing up in Cape Cod, you know, you drive down the road in the summertime and there were fruit stands and vegetable stands, and you got local produce and potatoes in the basement for the winter, and all from a local source. None of that exists anymore, not in Massachusetts, not in New York, not in South Africa with the audience we're talking about. In other words, we've taken upon ourselves to leave that good system, that local system behind for this centralized system, this last minute delivery system, and that is also going to be our undoing. What do you think about that?
You're making great points, and about the centralized just-in-time system. just in time won't be in time.
That's right.
And the reality is that what's old will become new, and these are what we're forecasting. Many of the things you're talking about in the Trends Journal, local is going to be huge, and it is actually where we are in upstate New York. The farmers markets are thriving. There are farm stands now sprouting up around the area. We're 2 hours north of New York City, and what we have here is a very rich agricultural area in the Hudson Valley, and the people are buying more and more local. You're going to start seeing, as because of the very systems that you were talking about, the central systems, we're seeing huge bankruptcies happening now across the board in stores, Circuit City, Starbucks cutting back on their openings, on their stores. The labor pool is shrinking dramatically. So now when you're seeing the too big to fails fail, you're going to start seeing entrepreneurs moving into the slots that they're leaving empty. And
well,
it's going to provide enormous benefit in the coming years. So this is going to be a depression for those who went down with the status quo.
Well, how
for
about
those who never played this, for those who never played the status quo game, they're going to benefit smartly if they look ahead and plan ahead.
Well, now I see, our cities have enlarged. We've got huge population groups in cities across the world, and my audience, you're talking to an audience that speaks to 150 nations, Gerald, right now. And the fact is, many of the people I broadcast to are in Europe and in Africa as well. I don't see those countries and those regions escaping this. Do you have any take on how they're going to fare in this upcoming problems? Because America, I think, is probably going to fare the worst as far as a difference between where they were and where they're going to end up. But the rest of the world is not going to be unscathed either.
No, you know the old saying, when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches cold.
Yeah.
Well, this is now America's caught pneumonia. The rest of the world is going to be on life support.
Yeah.
This is going to be very deadly for a lot of people in a lot of places. And what we're urging people now is to take precautionary measures in view of the worst that is yet to come. And after the worst is yet to come, yet worse will follow it. There's no end in sight. The only thing that we can see changing the scenario is something similar to what happened in the 1990s when America was in a severe recession. Remember, Bill Clinton won on that their motto, "It's the economy, stupid."
Yeah.
What got us out of the 1990s recession had absolutely nothing to do with government policy. It had all to do with the Internet revolution.
Productivity gains, yes?
Productivity gains, product development, and product sales. It was real hard product. It wasn't a lot of monetary and fiscal BS.
Yep.
So what they're doing now is by just printing money, they're creating a scenario for hyperinflation. So for South Africa, this might be very good times in the sense that there are a lot of precious, well, you have the, as a matter of fact, I was just in South Africa this past June speaking to De Beers at one of their major meetings. And what South Africa has is an abundance of gold and diamonds. And these are going to be very valuable commodities in the future, particularly as paper becomes more and more worthless.
Well, what I've discovered, Gerald, is that the people who are controlling some of the larger corporations, like De Beers, and Rio Tinto and Phelps Dodge, and I can go down the list, Barrick, all of the majors, Harmony, Kinross, almost to a company, are concentrated in a very few number of people's hands. And in fact, if you take a look at the people of South Africa, they have not benefited largely from the wealth of the minerals that have come out of their country, and even decades after
I agree with you, and I have to tell you that the reason De Beers brought me there was to tell their site holders that they have to give back. They have to give more back to the communities where they're at. And I can only tell you what I was brought there for, and they paid me a nice sum to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to show why it's so important to keep growing the local economies where you're at and trying to do more. That's one issue, and that's all true in the sense that some are and some aren't. Some's talk and some is reality. But going back to the basics of what I was saying is that there's going to be strong demand for gold and other precious items at a time when fiat currencies are not worth the paper they're printed on. As you well know, I'm sure you know, that there's a shortage right now of gold product in terms of coin and bullion.
Yeah, spot delivery, that's right.
Excuse me?
Spot delivery.
You're right.
You can get a spot price on an ETF, an exchange traded fund, but for actual physical delivery, spot delivery, you can't get it. And they actually, you know, spot means the actual price you pay, which is a nonsense because you can't get it at spot. If you go to somebody who's got an actual bar of gold, he wants spot plus 8% or spot plus 20%. There's no such thing right now as spot gold. You can't even find it.
And not only can you not buy spot on the commodities, but you can't. There's a shortage of coins. You go to any of the major websites, and they all have a disclaimer up there that it's going to take you several weeks to get your product because of such high demand.
Yeah.
So all we're saying is that there's going to be, you know, not everybody goes down with the ship. And as I mentioned, there are going to be many, many opportunities from a lot of different areas and at a lot of different levels. There is a great opportunity here for South Africa in terms of what gold demand is going to be in the future, and as well as diamonds. That diamond belt that you used to hear about, you know, during the wars, that may come back into fashion, because I could tell you something else is going to happen in America, and we're writing about it as we speak. And I took a break to come talk with you because we're coming out with our top 10 trends very shortly. But one of them is going to be a rise in crime the likes we've never seen before. And, of course, you know, it's pretty tough in your country over there. The people here aren't used to it at the levels they're going to see.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a major shakeup. And you phrased it very well that America, and I'd like, of course, to quote you perfectly, but the thought of what you said was that from where America, how high America was and how far it's going to fall, they have a lot further distance to fall than most.
That's right. And, you know, I'm worrying about, you know, the next leg, because they talk about this subprime stuff. And, you know, that was only the fuse that lit the bomb. But we've got actual paper on prime mortgages going belly up now. Because people that are being squeezed on their credit, squeezed at their job site, squeezed everywhere. You know, look for example, Gerald, if you've got a child in college, when I went to NYU, it was barely affordable. Take a look at it now. We're talking 45, 50 grand to go to NYU for a year if you're going to live there. Who in the world can afford that?
And for what? For an education that you get from the college industrial complex. You know, when we're advising people, and this is what I was saying, not to send your child to an expensive school if they're taking such courses as business administration, marketing, management, communications, journalism, art history, psychology. If you're going to be an engineer, one of the hard sciences and health, et cetera, where there's going to be accounting, where there's going to be a real return on investment, that's one thing. But if they're going for those other things, save your money because you're going to need it. And also to understand that you could send them to a community college, but even better yet, as they used to do in the old days, align them with a master for an apprenticeship so they learn a trade. Whether the trade is with the pen or as a plumber, you put them in those kind of situations.
I think you're exactly right, Gerald. And I think, you know, what I walked out of that place with was a book learning. And I, it took me probably 10 years in the real world to undo what they taught me.
Well, you see, I was more fortunate. I couldn't understand what they were teaching me, so I never learned anything.
What I'm saying is we're going to have tent cities in America. We're going to have a family.
We have them already. The next level is going to be people are going, you know, they have this thing in the U.S. that they don't have in any other country that I know of called self-storage units.
Yes.
And this is where people put all the junk that they have that they can't fit in their house. They put it off-site. Well, pretty soon, selves will be stored in these units because the people have nowhere to live. And they're emptying out as we speak. Current events form future trends. Citigroup, the nation's largest bank, is now laying off over 50,000 people.
Yeah.
J.P. Morgan, AP, Associated Press, you could go down the list. Now you have all of these people burdened with huge mortgages, living in their McMansions, driving their SUVs, and stretched beyond the limits of believability on their credit cards, and they're out of work. The next shoe to drop, the credit card is going to be one of them, but the big shoe to drop is going to be in the commercial real estate sector. As I mentioned, you have all of these huge companies that are now going belly up, like Circuit City, and after the Christmas season, there's going to be scores of others, and you're seeing all these store closings, one after another, from Macy's down to Foot Locker. You're going to start seeing vacancies crop up that'll never be filled in probably a lifetime. And all of these huge malls and big box stores, they don't have the major retailers to fill them anymore. So this situation is going to turn ugly, and it's going to turn ugly fast. Anybody believing that a politician is going to save them better grow up, because they're going to be out in the streets tomorrow, and the politicians will still be whining and dining at the finest affairs, being chauffeured around and being treated like kings and queens.
Well, now the banksters that got, I think a lot of them got caught out on this. I don't think, you know, some people, and I'm one of them, believe that some of these implosions, you know, the one that happened in 29 gave certain groups of people that had a lot of money and a lot of resources an opportunity to pick up big companies on pennies on the dollar. We see that a same vulture type scallywags come right behind these events with their checkbooks, picking up big assets for little money. Now, but one of the things that I think they didn't have an implosion planned right away, and I think it happened faster than they thought. And
we read, of course, you know, the conspiracy theorists, the Illuminati, and on and on. We consider what's going on now. If there's an Illuminati, the people, the world leaders, and the financiers behind all this, you know, from Sarkozy to Berlusconi to Brown to Merkel to Bush and all of the underlings, from our Fed Chairman Bernanke and Treasury Secretary Paulson, we would say by their actions, we'd call them the un-Illuminati. There's nothing brilliant coming out of here. This thing is way bigger than anybody could ever have dreamed of. There's
they got
no
caught
great
with their
scheme.
Gerald, they got caught with their pants down, it looks like to me. And I got to be honest with you. Some of the larger banks here in Europe are taking it on the chin, too. And we know, I'm talking Rothschild banks. I'm talking
big London. I know. This is what I'm saying. It's not like they had this thing planned out. These are not brilliant people. And people better get over this thing that there's a whole crowd of great minds out there that are pulling the strings. You see them on television. And I don't care who they are, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Obamas, the Sarkozys. What you see is what you get, Darryl. A bunch of empty suits with big mouths and giant egos. And that's why people better stop, you know, hiding from the truth and realize there's no one there to save them. This thing is collapsing.
That's right. I think you're right about that. And one of the problems I think we're going to face here is when people do turn for help and it isn't there, the violence that you're predicting is really going to take hold. And